Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
$1,000 on shoes?
What's the matter, Morty?
Moral, the string.
Can't you buy our whole dress?
Moral, the string.
Great gowns.
Moral,
beautiful gowns.
Fashion has changed.
Moral,
no, it hasn't.
Hi, my name is Chelsea Fairless. Welcome to the Every Outfit podcast. My co-host Lauren Garoni is still on maternity leave. She is busy lactating and swaddling and doing other motherly things, but we did manage to recap the latest episode of And Just Like That before she gave birth, which you are about to hear. And after that, I will be joined by two iconic New Yorkers, Brock Collier and Marissa Meltzer, and we are going to talk about Anna Wintour, Che Diaz, and the corporate shakeup at Glossier.
All right. I'm back to cover the fifth episode of And Just Like That, title Under the Table. It is directed by Julie Rottenberg, written by Rachel Palmer. This is Rachel Palmer's second episode. She wrote an episode last season, the iconic Bomb Cyclone. Who could forget that episode? Looking at Rachel's IMDb, I noticed that she also was a script consultant on Two Broke Girls, which is another Daddy MPK show, which maybe one day we'll cover on the Patreon.
Yeah, I never watched that. I heard it was good, though. People liked it.
I watched it here and there.
This episode starts with a Carrie voiceover.
The woman threw open her windows to let the city in. She could hear the horses coming and going with their carriages, each one bringing an exciting possibility. The unexpected cool breeze on this hot afternoon reminded her that each day need not be an echo of the one before. There are endless adventures to be taken if she simply dared to decide to take them. Putting one foot in front of the other, she stepped off the expected path and vowed to go wherever a day might take her.
So this is fully her novel.
Yeah. Seems like it's coming along.
So at this point, we can fully understand that when Daddy MPK said the voiceover was back, the ellipses was, the voiceover's back, but it's more like an audiobook for a novel that Carrie is in the process of writing.
Exactly.
So Carrie is back from Virginia.
Thank God.
I think she's a little more earthbound. I mean, we get this in a conversation later in the episode with Charlotte, but because I think she's soured on Aiden just a little bit, the outfits are even more insane.
Yeah, and we get this really great shoe montage at the top of the episode.
For those who are not watching, we do not mean the cat, we mean literal shoes.
Is Carrie wearing all of these crazy shoes? Nancy Sinatra is playing. It's satisfying from a fashion standpoint, but it's also very efficient storytelling because this scene is here to show us that Carrie has been tormenting her downstairs neighbor.
That's right.
I know what you guys are thinking. Carrie has a downstairs neighbor. What is this, Parasite? I know you didn't watch Lost, Lauren, but this feels like when we first met Desmond on Lost.
Okay. Well, he comes running up her back staircase, pounding on the door in the middle of the day to be like, you have to stop wearing heels.
Look, this is so realistic. This is a big issue in New York City between neighbors. And I, of course, have been on the carry end of this drama with neighbors previously.
Of course. But this man, who we don't know who he is just yet, is at a disadvantage. One, he is living in someone else's house. Two, he's like, look, I write during the evening, so I need quiet during the day. That is a request that is outside the bounds. It's not like she's walking in heels at 11 at night and it's keeping him up. It's 11 a.m.
Well, this is the thing, and this was my issue with my previous downstairs neighbor. This is how New York is. You can't move to New York and expect that it's going to be something else, you know? Although, to be fair, I didn't wear shoes inside, and I did put rugs down, and they were still psychotic.
Yeah, that's his reasoning. He's like, can you just decorate this place? And when he said that, I was like, I don't think that's going to make things better.
Well, a rug definitely makes things better, certainly. But that's such a huge apartment. She can't put rugs everywhere, you know?
Okay, I want to discuss this living arrangement, so we need to go to the next scene where Carrie is venting about this at lunch to Miranda, Charlotte, and Seema, where Seema informs her, oh, didn't I mention that your house came with a tenant who lives there half of the year? What? This is not a nitpick, Chelsea. We do need to get into this. If you spent, how much do we think the Gramercy multi-level townhouse is? $6 million? $8 million? $12 million?
I would say more like $12 million, right? I would think. I'm sure there's a New York Post article that could answer this for us. Because like a run-of-the-mill West Village townhouse is like $10 million now, right?
At least.
So this is like crazier than that because it comes with the park.
Could you imagine, was this how drunk in love Carrie was on Aiden's dick last season that she forgot to remember the huge asterisk of the Gramercy Park townhouse was like, oh yeah, half the year there's a tenant there. Also, he lives downstairs. She's never once wondered what that level that she can't access is.
Well, also, his apartment is like literally right off the garden. So all of those scenes that we had previously seen of her like typing on her laptop out in the garden, he was right there, like a stone's throw away.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't living there yet, but presumably you would imagine that she's looking through those windows being like, huh, what's in there?
The woman wondered, what the fuck is in there?
Or is the townhouse so large that she's been consumed with the floors above her and didn't think about the floor below her?
This scene is really great because we figure out who this man is. Miranda immediately recognizes him as a famous biographer who has done this. What did he do? A Winston Churchill biography?
He did indeed. His name is Duncan Reeves. He's basically hot Walter Isaacson because he's a prolific biographer. And Miranda is now on this man's side because she wants to read his book, his next book. She's like, you cannot interrupt his process. Can't you take your heels off? And we get a reference to a woman's right to shoes.
Yeah.
We also get a Devil Wears Prada reference, which felt very...
That was a little disorienting for me. Because to acknowledge that the Devil Wears Prada exists in the world of Sex and the City is to break the fourth wall. Because we know that's a Patricia Field joint.
Yeah, it felt very, very odd, especially because it's not directly a reference to the film. Carrie goes to play Devil Wears Prada advocate, which then just makes me think of the 1997 Al Pacino film, The Devil's Advocate. Also, in this lunch scene, Miranda reveals that she has a terrible Airbnb neighbor who's playing heavy metal at all times of night and day.
Look, I get it. I've been Miranda too. I had some like heroin addicted twink that was an EDM DJ live above me once.
Oof, that's rough.
It was.
So after the lunch, we get a Charlotte and Carrie walk and talk. And this is where Carrie discusses Aiden and she discusses how she's being more realistic, less romantic. Hence my theory about why the outfits are getting crazier. Carrie says that Aiden just can't be her everyday fella right now. This doesn't compute for Charlotte. She's like, I couldn't live without Harry. She's like, all right, thank you, Charlotte. My boyfriend lives several states away, and I might not be able to be with him for 5 years, but happy for you and Harry.
I'm just like so sick of this Aiden shit. He did not need her to be in a long distance relationship with Aiden. Be with Aiden or don't be with Aiden. I hate this like murky middle ground that they have laid out for us.
But Daddy MPK loves it. And at least they're dangling what seems to be a potential new love interest for Carrie in this Duncan Reeves.
Oh, absolutely. And thank God for him.
Although I can think of no worse situation as someone who did date someone who lived in their building than getting romantically entangled with someone that lives in your own building. Worse yet, your tenant, technically? What is he paying?
Look, everyone in New York has done this, and it's horrible.
Anyway, Carrie tries to wave the white flag in a way. She gets him a welcome basket from all the things around the neighborhood, which he doesn't seem to care about because he comes to New York to write. London is where he lives. New York is where he writes. I mean, New York is maybe the only place that's more stimulating than London. Like, why are you not upstate writing? But whatever. Fine. So Carrie gives this welcome basket to Duncan. He doesn't really care for it. As he said, he's not here to enjoy the delicacies of Gramercy Park, but to write. But he does get her a gift. And the gift is the ugliest slippers I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, it's like somewhere between a pink fuzzy slipper and like a knot sock.
Also, this would only make me double down on wearing heels all the time. I'm sorry, sir. This is my building. You have no authority.
Well, that's what Carrie does. She gets pissed off. She storms out. And then later in the episode, he almost burns his apartment down because he's wearing earplugs because her shoes are so annoying. And Carrie saves the day with her strappy sandals. And then things take a bit of a turn.
The turn being that they go out to dinner?
Yeah.
Because he's ruined his stew.
Yes, he's ruined his stew, so they go out to dinner. He reveals that he's working on this Margaret Thatcher biography, and she reveals that she's writing fiction for the first time.
Which, I'm sorry, no matter how much of a dick this guy is, if I learned he was basically hot British Walter Isaacson, I wouldn't reveal that I also was a writer.
Well, Carrie's a good writer. I don't know about whatever this is that she's doing now.
Well, also I noticed she does this thing in the scene that reminded me of when she first meets Aiden, and she pretends she doesn't know he's a furniture designer, and we get that voiceover where she's like, as soon as the lie came out of my mouth, I knew how much I liked him. She pretends to not know that Duncan is a writer when he reveals, like, oh, I'm here writing this novel. She goes, oh, you're a writer. I had no idea. So this is a Carrie tell that she definitely likes this guy.
And then when she gets home from this dinner, she very submissively takes her high heels off, which was maybe the most erotically charged moment we've gotten this season yet.
It was giving, you know, James Spader erotic thriller from the early 2000s vibes.
For sure. Can you imagine if Anne Just Like That did a hard pivot and became Baby Girl or Belle du Jour or something?
Oh my God, I would love it. Carrie doesn't leave the townhouse for weeks because she's in some dominant submissive game with a tenant.
And see, this was another And Just Like That free episode.
That's what I was gonna say when I was watching this, and the last scene is Carrie taking the shoes off. I wrote in my notes, I could really use an And Just Like That right about now.
See, my And Just Like That would be, And Just Like That, I renounced my right to shoes.
Ooh.
It's not great, but it's also not worse than a lot of the And Just Like That's that we've been given.
Yeah.
You could do worse than I renounce my right to shoes.
I sort of figured you would do a shoe-related one. So I went in a different direction, which we'll get into after we talk about Miranda and Carrie. But yeah, I was going to go with maybe like a And Just Like That, the other shoe dropped.
I thought about that too, but it kind of didn't make sense with the action of the scene.
It didn't, but it did feel like something Daddy MPK would write.
For sure.
You know the best thing about having this baby? I can finally take Nutrafol again. That's right, their postpartum formula will be keeping my hair in tip-top shape this summer. You may have heard of Nutrafol's hair growth supplements and wondered, do they really work? It's a fair question. Many hair supplements overpromise and underdeliver, but Nutrafol is different. As the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement brand, it is trusted by over 1.5 million people and is clinically tested to deliver real results in just 3 to 6 months. Everyone's root causes of hair thinning are different, so a one-size-fits-all approach to hair growth doesn't cut it. Nutrafol has multiple formulas designed to give your body what it needs to grow and support your hair's unique needs. Whether you're navigating postpartum like myself, menopause, a plant-based lifestyle, or simply looking to see less hair shedding, Nutrafol has you covered. This summer, stop worrying about your hair and start making memories. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter the promo code OUTFIT. Find out why Nutrafol is the best-selling hair growth supplement brand at Nutrafol.com, spelled N-U-T-R-A-F-O-L.com, promo code OUTFIT. That's Nutrafol.com, promo code OUTFIT.
Shall we move on to Miranda and Carrie? Because this is what I was most invested in this episode, was this plot line. And it was very cool to see Miranda and Carrie have a lot of scenes together, because we don't often get this.
We don't. And it answers a question that we and a lot of fuckettes have had since the beginning of this season, which is, why don't Carrie and Miranda just live together?
Yeah, Miranda hits her breaking point when her neighbor opens the door, dick out, with a meat cleaver.
Can I tell you something embarrassing? It took me 2 watches to clock that he was indeed naked, because he has such an extreme tan line. I thought he was wearing briefs the first time I saw this scene.
I don't know how you missed that. But we got some male full frontal nudity.
And thankfully it wasn't Aiden or Harry again. No prosthetic insight on this man. Is the Airbnb neighbor, does he have a point? Because Miranda has sort of passive aggressively been dropping notes underneath the door.
No, you have to do that.
Right. And the second time that she does that, he opens the door with a meat cleaver and he's like, if you do this again, I will chop you up.
Yeah, again, I understand both perspectives here. But there are some neighbors that are so loud that it is unreasonable. And it goes beyond like, oh, they're having a party or something normal.
And those are usually the people that have lived in the building for 30 years. They're just like of the building at this point. Miranda and Carrie have this weird phone conversation, which I realize is something that we don't usually see between the two of them, where Carrie seems pissed that Miranda is reading text messages while on the phone. It's not the point of the scene. And it goes by incredibly quickly, but Sarah Jessica Parker's acting in that scene seems very annoyed at something that, I don't know, I kind of do. Doesn't everyone?
Well, Carrie is just annoyed at Miranda for various reasons throughout this entire episode, and that is the beginning of that.
It is, because later in the conversation, Miranda, ever the problem solver, is like, hey, can you hook me up with Seema so that I can find a new place? And Carrie's like, no, I do not want to mix friendship with business.
Well, to be fair, she's still traumatized from her nonsensical fallout with Samantha. Like, why else would she say that?
There's that. I mean, I'm reminded of when Carrie demands that Charlotte sells her ring so she can buy her apartment back. And that's Charlotte's reasoning of why she doesn't want to give her the money. My dad always said not to mix business with friendship.
Anyway, I guess Carrie would rather have Miranda be her roommate than refer her to Seema. So that is what happens.
And we learned this factoid, which is in the 90s, they did briefly live with each other in an apartment on Bank Street.
Sure.
Sure. Didn't hear that in the opening of Sex and the City 2, but why not? Did not think that these people went below 14th Street until the 2000s, but whatever.
After Miranda moves in, we do get this brief scene where Carrie is texting Samantha. The return of Samantha.
In text form.
In text form, as always, because Carrie's like, who's this Duncan Reeves guy? And Samantha's like, I wish he was living under me.
He's a lot of fun.
Duncan Reeves is Samantha approved. He is getting hotter and hotter by the second.
There's also this brief moment where Miranda's moving in. Duncan Reeves comes home. We learn that it's Aiden who bought the first dibs table from the previous episode, and it's being delivered. And Miranda has like a fangirl moment with Duncan Reeves, and then he has like a real shitty line about, don't worry, you don't need like carpet pads or whatever. She has no carpeting in her place. Rude.
Yeah, but that's to be expected.
I think at this point, Carrie has put Hasn't she put the like carpeting?
The runner?
Yeah, she's put the runners throughout the townhouse, right?
Which is an insane thing to do, by the way. But anyway.
It makes it look so ugly.
Miranda has a date with Joy.
Oh, speaking of ugly?
Specifically, her first sleepover at Joy's apartment. And Miranda's like, you know what? I'm going to wear this marigold jumpsuit for some reason.
Also, we have to understand that Miranda specifically packed that marigold jumpsuit to take to Carrie's as an option to wear for this sleepover.
And she's like, Carrie, what do you think? And I'm like, surely Carrie's going to be like, girl, you can't wear that. That's not sexy. Here, let me find some things in my closet that you can borrow, and maybe we could get a little Miranda Carey fashion montage. But no.
I mean, we get a hint of it.
We did not get a hint of it. She opened one drawer, pulled out this ugly scarf, and is like, here. And it somehow makes the outfit even worse.
Right. Miranda's reasoning of why she's not outright sexy is because she knows she's going to have to do a walk of shame. So she wants something that can bridge the gap from night to day. Usually people are trying to go day to night. She's trying to go night to day, which I'm like, this outfit doesn't work for either.
Look, if she just wore this to Human Rights Watch, I wouldn't think anything of it. It just wouldn't be my choice for the first time she's going to sleep with someone. Also, taking off a jumpsuit in a sexual context is always kind of awkward.
We've been over our feelings about jumpsuits. Not a fan. We also learned why Carrie might have only furnished Miranda with a scarf, and it's because Carrie is clearly not over the fact that many years ago, she loaned Miranda a Sonia Rykiel domino bag that Miranda promptly lost. If this episode is anything, this is passive-aggressive Carrie.
Oh, yeah.
Because the way that she delivers the line isn't like, yeah, I'm still kind of annoyed by that, so I'm only giving you this scarf that I got at a flea market. It's like, oh, the Sonia Rykiel domino bag? I don't think about it at all anymore.
No, she's so passive aggressive. So Miranda goes over to Joy's house and immediately takes off the scarf and is like, let's make sure nothing happens to this scarf.
This scarf is Chekhov's scarf.
And they attempt to have sex, but her Italian greyhounds bark.
They're very cute.
At least they're cute.
So Miranda leaves in the middle of the night?
I was confused by this because at first I thought, oh, Miranda just took Joy to Carrie's apartment because the dogs were being annoying. But I don't think that's what actually happened. It was just the way that the scenes were cut made it confusing.
A confusing editing choice, and then just like that? I think you're mistaken, Chelsea. So Carrie's up in the middle of the night. She's going to the bathroom, which is not en suite. Girl, you paid $12 million for a Gramercy townhouse. I know you get access to the park, which we've never seen, but like you have a tenant you didn't ask for, and you have to go outside into the hallway to go to the bathroom? Where you see a buck naked Miranda.
I loved that. I love that Cynthia was doing like practically full frontal. It was somewhere between topless and full frontal.
We got the hint of what Miranda's rocking under her underwear. But again, the editing is so jarring of the scene. Carrie's so shocked and Miranda isn't shocked that I was like, oh, is Miranda sleepwalking? Like, are we introducing a sleepwalking narcolepsy storyline?
What I find to be so funny is that Miranda in this episode is not written as type A Miranda. She is written as the slacker roommate from Notting Hill. And this scene is very in keeping with that.
Oh my God. Which, by the way, I believe is more Cynthia than Miranda. Like, this type of laissez-faire, walking around naked.
Yeah, Miranda is not a walking around naked type of gal, or she wasn't always written that way. Also, just because Carrie is in this silk robe and in this pre-war apartment, the shot of her horrified face, like, it literally looks like the cover of one of those gothic romance novels.
Right.
You know? It's like straight up horror on this woman's face, but also intense glamour.
It's so incongruous. I guess it's supposed to be played for comedy, but it is so confounding. And then we immediately cut to the next morning.
Well, okay, but before we get into the next morning, why exactly is Carrie so horrified that she has seen her friend naked, who she's already seen naked before. It's one thing if you're like seeing, I don't know, your father-in-law naked for the first time or something.
Right.
But like, why is Carrie so visibly shaken?
And I'm just going to say it. Cynthia Nixon looks incredible.
Oh, incredible. I loved this scene. I just, again, I'm like, why is Carrie such a fucking prude?
Carrie's a prude. Carrie is also type A to the nth degree, which sort of comes to a climax the next morning where Miranda is in the very tiny kitchen, which... I haven't even brought up the fact we're 5 episodes in. I'm like, is that the kitchen of the house? Or is that like supposed to be a maid's kitchen?
Yeah, I feel like it's something like that. But that's fine. She doesn't need a big kitchen. She's not cooking anything. All she's doing in her kitchen is eating her banana and her yogurt. And that brings us to this very awkward scene.
Is that my last yogurt?
You don't eat yogurt.
Yes, I do.
Since when?
Since I'm 50. Whose yogurt did you think it was?
I don't know, like a house yogurt.
A house yogurt?
Okay, oh, come on. I just woke up. I'll get you more. It's just a yogurt.
And the last banana?
You eat bananas now too? All you used to have for breakfast was a cigarette.
All right, I'm on Team Miranda. Carrie, when have you ever eaten breakfast?
Well, also, it's like, why is Carrie a prude now and anal retentive?
And by the way, you and I have lived together multiple times over the last few years. You and Tad have had to crash at my place when things are going on with your place. You know what is one of the first things that I do? I order the things you like to eat and put it in the fridge. That is what a good host is.
Well, a good host wouldn't shame someone over a single yogurt. Also, this woman is rich.
Get an Uber Eats order.
Literally. Get a breakfast delivered from Baltazar. Like, what is going on?
And presumably Miranda has money as well. If she's paying for an Airbnb in the West Village, I suppose that brownstone sale went very well. That's the other thing. I mean, we're shitting on Carrie, but also Miranda could just be like, hey, thanks for housing me. Like, I ordered breakfast from Pastis.
Yeah, it just does not make sense to me. This is just not the woman I know.
Hashtag not my Carrie.
Not my Carrie.
Today's episode is also brought to you by Splendid. Are we still hot girl summering? What's the vibe? I can't tell because I haven't left my house in weeks and have been living in my pajamas. And do you know whose pajamas I've been living in? Splendid's, of course. Splendid has the world's softest closet staples to elevate your wardrobe and help you feel comfortable and confident in every outfit. Think buttery soft tees, pull-on pants that fit just right, easy sets, sweaters for every season, and so much more. Their pieces are next level soft and actually hold up in the wash. I love their elevated, comfortable sets like the Stella Linen full-length pant and button-down. It's comfortable enough to lounge on the couch all day, but put together enough that the visitors you have over don't know that you haven't showered today. Too specific? Look, Splendid isn't just perfect for a postpartum capsule collection for myself. They have something for everyone. My mom has shopped at Splendid for years. She and I have purchased baby clothes for Morty. In this family, we love Splendid. Right now, Splendid is offering our listeners 20% off when you go to Splendid.com and use promo code OUTFIT at checkout or when you shop at Splendid in stores. Go to Splendid.com and use code OUTFIT for 20% off online or in store. That's Splendid.com, promo code OUTFIT.
Seema comes over to look at the table that Aiden has bought Carrie from First Dibs. God forbid another friend sets foot in her house. Carrie is instantly annoyed about Seema walking in heels.
Well, yes. And Carrie also has this thing throughout the episode where everyone's like, but you're wearing heels. And she's like, but I know how to walk in them.
Well, that's true, though, because I know how to walk in heels.
Silently.
In a downstairs neighbor context. Also, you have to basically walk on the balls of your feet like a ballerina.
To add insult to Carrie's injury, she cannot show Seema the table because Miranda is fully working and using the table as it should be used.
Okay, but this was really, really messy. Again, this is Notting Hill roommate behavior.
So Miranda has all of her law review books out, her computer, the things she needs to say, I think, for her next BBC segment, and some Mexican food. Miranda, of course, knocks over the Mexican Coke that that she's drinking. We should say Carrie's last Mexican Coke. Carrie, why are you down to the last of everything?
The fact that she's like, is that my last Mexican Coke? Terrifying. So scary.
Chell, at what point are you like, I'm booking a hotel, actually?
Well, this is that point for Miranda.
So, yeah. So Miranda knocks over the Mexican Coke. Miranda uses Carrie's scarf to clean up the mess. Carrie uses Miranda's research paperwork that she needs to try to sop up the Mexican Coke. They're both equally annoyed at each other.
Well, the scarf thing would make more sense if not for the previous scene with Joy. Why did she go out of her way to tell Joy that the scarf was important and then do this?
Well, I guess she doesn't want to lose an item of Carrie's again. But Carrie makes a point to be like, oh, I'm lending it to you because it has no emotional value. I got it at a flea market for no money. So like in Miranda's mind, she's like, this is basically as good as a paper towel to Carrie.
Look, I hate to break it to Carrie, but those glass tables are nightmares. A glass dining table? Girl, you're gonna spend your life cleaning that table.
Glass and wood?
Yeah.
Nightmare combination. Only worst kind of table, Chelsea, is those tables, and I'm sure Aiden makes tables like this now in Virginia, where it's the two pieces of wood and then they put resin in between it to connect the table.
Oh, he absolutely makes those tables. After this whole drama, Carrie and Miranda simultaneously come to the conclusion that this isn't working and Miranda has to leave immediately.
But even in this scene, Carrie is super sarcastic in a way that we've really never seen Carrie be, because she's like, no, I was gonna say you should stay forever, which is like, fuck you.
No, she's really passive aggressive. She's just so annoying during this episode. It's fully crazy. And it kind of sucks because I thought that when Miranda and Carrie moved in together, like, that sounds like a great idea. That sounds like a lot of fun. But we couldn't have one fun thing happen while they were roommates. We couldn't have a movie night, or God forbid they threw a party or something.
Yeah, I would go for a total sitcom shenanigans. I mean, it worked for, what, 7 seasons on Full House? They were inventing places for Uncle Jesse to live. Like, give Miranda a floor. Give her the fucking attic. Who cares?
I just wish this had gone on for longer, because as the audience, I think we'd rather have Carrie and Miranda be roommates than Miranda just find an apartment immediately.
It's just so interesting that these episodes are so long. There's so much story. We haven't even gotten into the majority of the characters in this episode. And yet, somehow still nothing happens. No plot is progressing. It's just a random assortment of stuff of, like, again, as I've always said, like, the impulse is correct. Miranda and Carrie living together, super fun. Execution, very bizarre. And somehow, Carrie is now willing to turn her back on what she previously said about mixing friendship and business, and it's like, you know what, actually, Seema, this one needs an apartment. She needs to get the fuck out of here.
Seema in this episode is trying to get a bank loan for her new real estate agency. And this is a little rough for me, because in 3 seasons of And Just Like That, you've told me that Seema is one of the most successful realtors in New York, with a Birkin and an Upper East Side apartment and a driver. And now you're telling me she can't rent an office in Tribeca without a loan.
That she needs a bank loan that she cannot get because she has a lot of overhead. Again, so much of this is so bizarre. It, of course, has a lot of echoes of when Carrie tries to get a bank loan to buy back her apartment and can't get it. The loan officer is like, you have a lot of overhead and you don't have a proven business at this point. Fair. She's like, why do you have a chauffeur? And in my head, I'm like, she has a chauffeur so that she can get between listings faster. And instead, Seema's like, I have appearances to keep up. I'm like, wait, what?
Well, that makes sense. Like, if my realtor pulled up with a driver in that car, I would be like, damn. And that's why she has it. But again, I just find it interesting that this is a struggle that this character is having.
Of course. And it's also like, why can't Seema just be cool? Like, I understand.
She is cool.
I mean, she's sort of flaming out this season. Dating's not going well. Business not going well.
Well, maybe she's going to hook up with Carrie's landscape designer or whatever.
Adam. Yes, they share a cigarette in this episode. And like, there are some vibes.
And that's a cute love interest for Seema because he's laid back and she is very much the opposite of that.
Can we discuss Adam's cousin, nephew, who's very clearly on the spectrum?
We can. I don't have much to say about him, but he is on the show. He is a new side character. So shall we move on to Charlotte and LTW?
Of course. We now know what Charlotte's big storyline for the season is going to be.
And you know what? Great. Thank God.
Her storyline is dealing with Harry having the big C.
Okay, but still, that's better than the college admissions consultant and Richard Burton being canceled. At least she has some dramatic stuff to do.
This is true. Harry pissing his pants and then yet again having ghost cum problems was all leading to something. I didn't believe it. But it was leading to the fact that Harry goes to the doctor because of these things, and he is diagnosed with prostate cancer, which he tells Charlotte during a lovely evening stroll in front of the Guggenheim.
Of course, all I could look at was her crossbody bag with Richard Burton's face on it.
All I could think about is probably for the character of Charlotte in this world, she will forever now associate the Guggenheim with her husband having cancer.
Oh, yeah.
We should also say that he doesn't want to make a big deal about this, so Charlotte can't tell anyone that he has cancer.
Which is unreasonable, in my opinion, but whatever. We can move on. So then they go glamping with the Wexleys on Governor's Island. That's funny.
That's funny. But it's also the...
Just for context, Governor's Island is literally in the New York Harbor.
There are many shots where you can see downtown Manhattan as they're sitting in their tents. I was about to say setting up their tents, but there's nothing to set up. There's also a spa in this place. And yet everyone is trying to get out of going. You have Herbert, who multiple times in this episode gaslights LTW. The first is when he's like, you never told me we were glamping in Governor's Island this weekend.
Well, how are we supposed to know? That happened off screen.
I'm with you. The kids don't want to go glamping. Lily's reasoning as to why she doesn't want to go glamping is because Diego will have no choice if she can't be with him on her designated weekend to spend it with his boyfriend. Which I was sort of like, actually, can we spend more time with that storyline than glamping on Governor's Island?
No. I don't want to spend any time with that storyline. What I do want is a scene of Charlotte just bitching to Carrie and Miranda like Lily's in a poly relationship. But instead, we get this Governor's Island thing. LTW has just come back from Atlanta, a trip to Atlanta with her hot editor. And Herbert finally sees a photo of her hot editor and is like a bit taken aback, a bit jealous.
Not before he gives her shit. Again, this is the second time he gaslights her where he's like, where is the chocolate for the s'mores? And she's like, why would I know where that is? He goes, I asked you for that. She goes, no, you didn't. And again, this is a scene that happens off screen. Did it happen? Did it not happen?
Yeah, we don't even know if he's gaslighting her. Give Herbert the benefit of the doubt. We have no clue.
But this insane argument allows Charlotte to yell, it's chocolate, not cancer, and then walk off.
Okay, we've talked about these outfits because we had seen them in the promotional photos for the show. But within the context of these very emotional scenes, it's like even more insane because Charlotte is wearing basically like a full 1950s camping outfit. I don't know if people actually dress like this in the 50s or they just did in movies that I've seen, but it's very much that look.
I was going to say, it feels like something from an I Love Lucy episode I watched once.
Yeah, or a Doris Day movie or something. Whereas LTW is... I don't even know if I can describe this outfit.
No, I think you described it perfectly from the trailer. You called it a South Beach Ronald McDonald outfit?
I forgot about that. You know, it's another Marigold outfit. Who knew that the color of Marigold would loom so large in this episode? I don't know. It's weird because it's a weird hybrid garbage. Like, it has these utilitarian qualities to it, but it also has these fishnet panels. Like, we've described things as being Project Runway in the past, and I think that more speaks to like construction issues, but this is like a Project Runway concept. You know what I mean?
You're a busy documentarian who just got back from Atlanta and you have 60 minutes to go to Governor's Island for glamping.
No, the challenge would have been glamping. And this is what someone would have done. And they would be like, look, there's all of these, you know, pockets for storing things. Anyway, Charlotte and LTW both escape their families.
Because there's a full-on spa at this glamping center?
I don't think it's at the glamping center. I think it's just on Governor's Island.
Oh, interesting.
You know, they're just on foot. There aren't cars on Governor's Island, I don't think. So I think you have to walk everywhere.
Because I was this close to being like, you guys have money. Just spend a long weekend at the Mandarin Oriental getting spa treatments. What are we doing here?
Well, they end up having some quality time, although Charlotte does not reveal Harry's cancer diagnosis to LTW, although obviously she's fucked up in the head.
Well, yes, she has a nervous breakdown in front of her children because everyone is inside the glamping tent on their phones. But we do get in this scene LTW revealing or asking Charlotte, you know, is it bad to have a crush on a coworker? A fair storyline incoming, perhaps?
I hope so. That's obviously where this is going. She's either going to get really close to having an affair or she is going to have an affair.
No, but it's in just like that. It's going to be some like secret third thing we couldn't possibly think about. She's going to learn that like Marion and her are related somehow.
Stop. I hope she has an affair. That would be amazing. Again, we either have to have really dramatic things happen on this show or we have to have really funny, cringe, Aiden jerking off, hey, it's Che Diaz kind of stuff. Although, you know what? To this episode's credit, a lot went down in this episode.
A lot of plot happened.
Yeah.
Where is it going exactly? I'm not quite sure.
We don't know, but I am encouraged by all of this stuff with Carrie's neighbor. If we could get Aiden out of the picture sooner rather than later, that would be great. If LTW fucks her editor, that would be great. And if Seema ends up with Carrie's gardener, I'm also down for that.
And you're fine with Charlotte sitting bedside holding vigil for Harry as he battles prostate cancer?
At least that's meatier. This does speak to reality, right? Prostate cancer is incredibly common. But also, he could have had a worse kind of cancer. Like, this isn't that fucked up. You know what I mean?
For sure. He could have stage 4 esophageal cancer.
Right. This is not a death sentence for Harry Goldenblatt.
Ooh, I realized that I didn't do my and just like that.
Oh yeah, what's your and just like that?
And just like that, I got my house yogurt and banana back. Let's be honest, that's really what Carrie cares about this episode.
That's an incredibly petty and just like that, but I don't think Carrie is above it.
Honestly, it would have been great if she took the shoes off and then she was sipping on a Mexican Coke.
Oh, God.
Well, I can't wait to see what you have for the rest of the episode, Chelsea.
Yeah, same girl. Let's find out.
Guys, I have a special treat for you today. I am joined by two journalists, two real-life Carrie Bradshaws, who are two of the funniest people in New York City. Welcome to Every Outfit, Brock and Marissa.
Thank you.
Hi, Chelsea.
I definitely am a Samantha, though.
Yeah, you are Samantha.
I think people who don't know me might think I identify as a Carrie, but I am the purest Samantha that I know.
I can see that, but also, like Carrie, you do smoke in inappropriate places.
Oh my God, that's legendary.
You've done that too, yeah. Chelsea.
I do it everywhere. I believe in asking forgiveness and not permission when it comes to cigarettes.
Yeah, I mean, I'm much less. I can't do that. I can't.
You vape everywhere,
bitch. I know,
but
vaping is different. You should be able to vape, like, in front of babies, on the subway, like, wherever you want. It's water vapor. I don't understand the problem.
But Brock, do you identify as a Carrie?
Oh, I'm a Carrie Bradshaw.
Yeah, I think,
you definitely
Unfortunately,
are.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I figured as much. Mm-hmm. So what is your guys' read on this season of And Just Like That, the latest episode of And Just Like That?
God. I will say the good thing about the show is it's made me think very deep about aging and psychology in this way where I wonder, is it possible to change so much in however many years we're supposed to have elapsed between Sex and the City and in Just Like That, that you have an entire personality transplant bordering on a lobotomy? Like, does age just do that?
No, because I know women of that age in New York who are, you know, having the best time of their lives. These women are not having fun.
I don't know how old they're supposed to be, but I am 47, soon to be 48. Not so dissimilar from these people, and like, yeah, my life.
And you smoke in inappropriate places.
I don't know anyone with a hip replacement. I don't even know any 80-year-olds with a hip replacement.
Like, they're just like not having any fun. They don't spend any time together. Like, I don't know. It drives me crazy. I'm more interested in Lily's like polyamorous bisexual relationship than anything happening with the rest of them.
They keep calling it polysexual and polyamorous.
That's not a real thing.
No, right? Like, that's like real. Someone
I've never
like
heard
some
of that.
Person was like seeing if they would just put it in the script. Like, yeah. Oh yeah, they're calling polysexuals now. Like, oh really?
It's ridiculous.
Okay, I do want to play one call about this episode because someone called in and pointed out something that I did not notice.
What's up? Okay, watching episode 5, my new way to get through it is that I am prescribed medical ketamine for anxiety purposes, so I just pop one of those to make the experience a little more enjoyable. Anyway, I'm watching episode 5 right now, and I swear to God, this bank teller is the same bank teller, the one that's talking to Seema, also talks to Carrie years ago when Carrie tried to take out a loan when her and Aiden split up. I swear to God, it's the same actress, even though I found her IMDb and it doesn't say she's in And Just Like That, but like, this is the same bitch. It has to be. And also, the woman, the character name who was the bank teller for Carrie was named Linda, and now she's Linda again talking to Seema. So this is the same person. All right. Just had to call in. Love you guys. Bye.
See, I didn't even bother to fact check this. I'm just going to assume that it's true.
Yeah. Ketamine makes you so smart. Also, it would be in the world of And Just Like That where they're like, there's one bank and there's one loan person. Also, no one goes in person to a bank, I don't think, for like a business loan.
Also, I'm sorry, that's not even a fun callback, though. It's not like they brought back an amazing, memorable character.
You know who I want is Che Diaz's trans vet nurse or whatever. That woman seemed like she was about to get a whole spinoff, and I'd like her back.
Also, it would be an amazing gag if they were the bank teller also.
Oh my God, the nurse.
Also, again, the idea that Seema is having to get this loan is just ridiculous in the first place.
When Carrie first knew her and they went to that Diwali party that I think it was for, didn't her family seem loaded?
She's loaded.
Yeah. She has a car and a driver.
Her whole personality is that she's loaded. Like, that's how we were introduced to this
woman. She's loaded.
She was neutral.
And I couldn't help but wonder, am I Seema? Yeah. But no, she's clearly got some, like, investment property that she could use towards. It's just stupid. It's stupid. They hate women.
There's your hot take.
Well, like, she would be the number one person because... If they were like, you have no money coming in, but she would be like, here is my Rolodex of like 100 clients or whatever. Here's my tax records for the past 10 years where I've made, you know, $750,000. Like, it just doesn't work like that. Like,
and also, this just isn't a good plot line for her.
Yeah,
like,
the other
she's
thing
fired
is like,
because of Ryan Serhant. Like, it just makes it, it's like...
I know. Well, that's the thing. This is where the show makes me crazy because I start talking about loan structure when really, like, they need a hard reset because all these plot lines are so dumb and make me feel crazy. There are so many side characters. Like, why are we following Seema on her journey to get a loan? Why do I know about Lisa Todd Wexley's editor? I'm sure Marion, the editor, is going to get a side character at some, like an assistant. We've already been teased that there is like a second editor. I'm sure we're meeting them.
But again, like Miranda had a 2-episode plot line about really liking reality television. I'm like, okay.
And yet they won't let her date. Why can't she go on more disastrous?
Oh, I kind of love her girlfriend. I love this like journalist girlfriend for her.
I like Dolly too, as I think that's her name.
But I don't know why she didn't stay despite the dogs. Like, dogs watching you have sex. Someone's cat or dog watching you have sex is not a huge problem.
It's also very normal. Yeah.
No.
So normal.
But you don't think she stayed?
No, she goes home and that's when she's like naked in the hallway.
Oh, I thought maybe she like stayed but went home really early, or I don't know.
No, I'm still confused about that. I have no idea. And I've seen this episode twice at this point. And it still eludes me, the answer to that question.
I still have no idea why Carrie is so shocked to see her friend's naked body. It's the thing that I hate so much about Carrie now is that she's just this insane prude who, like... Why...
Also, Mexican Coke?
That woman is never drinking Mexican Coke. She's never heard of Mexican Coke. She's been to Mexico once for her failed honeymoon.
She should be doing coke in Mexico. And instead,
God, again, a show we all need to be watching.
None of the main girls will ever do coke. And it's so unfortunate. They came this close with Charlotte a couple episodes ago.
Oh, I forgot.
If Charlotte had
that.
Done coke, I would have taken back everything I've ever said badly about this season. But okay, let's actually talk about this for a second. Have any of them ever done coke? Like, in any point in their life?
No.
Oh, I mean,
you don't think
Samantha
Carrie,
has done coke.
Samantha, yes,
Seema
obviously.
Is doing
Samantha
coke.
Samantha does coke now.
Yeah.
Seema does a bump here and there.
Seema does
her.
A line twice a year. Mm-hmm. Charlotte, never.
Never.
Never? Miranda, not even never. A frat party?
No.
Miranda, I don't think so.
And she's too much of a prude, even
like
though.
Once at Danceteria and she had a bad time?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, the reality of this situation is she would have been doing coke all the time on Sex and the City.
Well, yeah, for sure.
Like, that is the character. That's the reality. Mm-hmm. Same with
Samantha.
That's
the fifth character. Mm-hmm. It's not New York.
It's cocaine. Samantha would never not have a bag.
Oh,
like
absolutely.
Sex and the City, Samantha. Never.
Samantha would have 1.5 Cosmos and be, like, spending a lot of time in the bathroom at Sushi Samba.
Oh, my God. They should send one of them to ketamine therapy, speaking of
I was going to say, like,
that would
I would love if Miranda is so the type to get super into, like, microdosing mushrooms or going on an ayahuasca retreat to explore her queer sexuality.
Or she's, like, has so much PTSD from saying cunt on national television that she needs, like, psychedelic therapy.
For sure. Drugs would fix everything for this season. Mm-hmm. It would make it so much more interesting. And instead, it's just so boring.
Well, the only person that kind of did drugs was Che Diaz, RIP.
I can't believe we've gotten to the point where I just miss Che Diaz so much.
I know. Same.
Hey, it's Che Diaz.
We didn't realize what we had, which is an insane thing to say out loud. But, like, I'm feeling it more and more the deeper I'm getting into season three, which brings me something that I want to talk about with Brock. Mm. Brock, you have written several articles for New York Magazine that intersect with the world of Sex and the City in one way or another. But I want to start with this profile that you wrote about Sada Ramirez a couple years ago. To me, one of the most foundational pieces of journalism about And Just Like That, although it was not well received by the subject who came for you on Instagram in a post that has since been deleted, but lives rent-free in my mind, and I'm sure yours
as
well.
I need ketamine therapy to get over this fucking profile experience.
Yeah, what was that like?
I don't really know what happened. I mean, I think at the end, like, I try to be so nice to my subjects, even when they are...
Even when they start with a LAN acknowledgement?
Yes, and when they're annoying me. Like, it's not like I would ever be like, oh, you're so lame. So I think that they were really surprised when I wrote a somewhat catty piece after we had a somewhat polite trip to the park together. And I guess my main idea, which is what really made them mad, is that my idea going into the piece was that the actor is just like Che Diaz. And on their whole press tour for And Just Like That, all the headlines had been Sada Ramirez is not Che Diaz. Like, they were clearly trying to get ahead of this problem and, like, dispel the differences between them, even though their Instagram bio at the time was, like, essentially how Che introduces themselves in the show.
Yeah, it was like a Mexican...
Abolicious, bisexual, Mexican, Irish diva. Yes, correct.
What was she... Do you remember what was she wearing? I'm curious, like, was the hair the same? And did she do the weird, like, butch clothing with a full knee? Sorry, they.
I mean, they were... Yeah. I mean, you could tell, unfortunately, that they were a bit of a diva and maybe are not the best celebrity at handling public attention. They showed up to Central Park and, like... big Oakley sunglasses and a hat. and we were being trailed by this poor assistant. Everything about the interview was very awkward. For example, I had to meet the assistant at like 71st Street, and then Sada went to 72nd Street, and so then the assistant had to do the introduction to Sada. Like, I was not allowed to go greet them myself. Like, it all had to happen through the assistant.
Wow. I mean, I think that they're intense.
A diva. Yeah, they're a diva.
I always say for, like, celebrities that you're writing about, the ones that are really, truly famous are always so easy. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. you're showing up to their house. It's all been negotiated. So, yes. And it's the ones that are a little bit famous that are... have so many hoops where there's like, yeah, three assistants and they're like, don't tell anyone what neighborhood I live mm-hmm, in. And mm-hmm. it's like, okay, you know, woman who is on one season of The Real Housewives. Yeah. Or something. Yeah.
And the self-seriousness. I mean, we're talking about a show in which their character is getting high all the time. And they're trying to kind of lecture me about how it's really important bisexual representation. And, you know, and it was just like, okay, like this is not a real... conversation. Like, have you watched the show that you're on? Do you understand what you're talking about? We're talking about Sex and the City. We're not talking about... Also, bisexual representation is not a real concept. Like, bisexual people do not need, like... And they, you know, they told me that they had learned a lot. I think this is in the story that they were learning a lot from bi elders about bisexual history. It's just like, that does not exist.
There's, I would love to know who, there's know no who such, I Sara Ramirez's bi elders are.
And someone else, I was interviewing these bisexuals this week for something else, and they were telling me that they were also learning a lot about their bisexual history. I was like, what? What are you talking about? And why do you need a history?
Well,
the third person at Stonewall who threw a brick was a bisexual?
Do you think they're just reading Barry Diller's memoir and like being like my bisexual elders and our history?
Yeah, there's one bisexual elder that we know of, for sure.
Barry Diller.
Barry Diller.
I know, but do we even really want to call him bisexual? I think he was just gay in a marriage. With a woman, you know?
In which case you call Calvin Klein a bisexual elder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Calvin Klein is definitely a bisexual elder.
My guess is Sara Ramirez was not consulting Barry Diller.
No, I don't think so.
Nor were they consulting Calvin Klein about bisexual representation and history. And then, okay, so tell us about...
Oh, yeah, so then they make a
post.
It
came out, and then what did you hear?
Yeah, so I never heard... I didn't hear much from them. Well, pretty much nothing except... angry publicist stuff after the piece came out. And then, I mean, I think it was 2 months later, they make this post on Instagram, which just so happened to be on the day that they announced that they were not coming back for the second season. That might need to be fact-checked. I'm pretty... It was aligned
like
with
that.
The same...
I think it was, yeah.
It was so... It was all very strange, and of course they...
I want to say the post was first... And then
I think
it was
the
announced.
First was, yes, that's correct. The post was first, and then something happened later that evening. Like, oh, you know what it was? The post came, and then later that day, the season three was announced that it was happening, but they were not going to be on it. Yeah, and then the post was so weird. They're like kind of like calling me non-binary, but in a bad way, which they are too, you know? And like at the end of the post, like make this long list of statements that I didn't even touch in the story. They're like, you know, number one, I can be, you know, I can love women and men, and that's okay. And it's like, that's not even something I wrote about. Like,
Just noticing you have your vape on your lap.
Yeah, I know, I do. Because I'm getting nervous. I need to clutch something when I talk about this.
I know, we would be so good if I just had cigarettes in an ashtray and you were vaping and we were like as if we were on like a European TV show.
But I mean, I guess what's crazy about that post, like, again, what they were most mad about is that I compared them to Che Diaz. And then they make this post that is so Che Diaz.
So
like
Che Diaz.
It proves the point from the beginning. I felt somewhat vindicated. Oh, and they called me a petulant child, which really, you know, I don't know. I'm not a petulant child.
See, I like their use of quotations with writer and written throughout this post.
Yeah, because that's called, it's one of those things where, no, that's just a fact. Like, it's not a legend.
Well, and this is also the post where which was kind of in the article, but they really start going after MPK. Like,
right.
Oh, mm-hmm. right. Mm-hmm.
Because it was something to the effect of, like,
let's blame
this, like, cis gay man for this show is whack.
Yes.
Essentially.
Yes.
And not the fact that there was, like, what was that sound effect on the podcast? Like,
woke moment. Yeah, or whatever.
We should start doing that.
I know.
I know. Why don't you start adapting?
There was
that?
Also a trigger warning one.
Yeah.
Okay, I've thought about this. And okay, so there were three people on the podcast, right? Mm-hmm. There are three of us now. Mm-hmm. Am I the Che Diaz at this table of the podcast?
No. If anything, you're the least Che Diaz.
Then what?
You're the most bisexual.
Am I the what's his name Bobby that had the girlfriend that fucked up Carrie's Met Gala dress?
Oh, God.
Because I'm not Carrie.
That was Smoke, actually.
I knew. Bobby. I was about to call her Shade, but you're right. Smoke.
That was Smoke. Never forget.
Again, this show has this weird psychological effect where it makes me turn so far inward that I'm almost grateful for it because I have it. It's almost like therapy because I'm forced to really look at myself.
I don't think I've ever had that moment.
No, not once.
We do need Che Diaz back right now to give advice on the aforementioned polysexual situation.
Oh, for sure.
Like, I need scenes of Che Diaz being like, Lily, this is how you handle a boyfriend and a girlfriend at the same time.
Would love. At this point, I would kill for a Che Diaz spinoff.
Just we like, might. I mean, fingers
che
crossed. That would be
writing
amazing.
In L.A. Like, maybe there's a plot line with, is it Oliver Hudson who played Che's ex-husband?
I forget.
Kate Hudson's brother. I think that's the actor.
I think so.
Like, people will they or the won't they the with show. Oliver Hudson? Like, just like dating so many like girls, gays, theys, just plowing through the east side of L.A. I would love it. I would love it at this point. I'm so desperate for some fun. These girls are not having fun on And Just Like That.
No. They all have like sad, miserable lives.
Mm-hmm. And the thing is, they're at an age where like, you know, I live on the Upper East Side. I'm around Charlotte's people. She would be having the most fun, boozy lunches with her girls daily. Like, she'd be going to Pilates, showering, changes, and then, like, having a two-hour lunch at Avra or
Those women
or
go
say,
out and they are mean and they are
gossipy.
Yeah,
they're gossipy. All good. Yeah, like it's my dream. That's why I live up there. I want to be one of them. And then she'd do some like casual, like I also think she would not dress as Looney Tunes as she does. I think she would be going to like Totem and be like, oh, I'm going to get this like monogram set perfect for lounging around the home. And then she'd go to Butterfield Market and she'd spend like $300 on like rotisserie chicken. Like her life would rule and she would love it.
I think like what I want out of the show is actually just what I want out of Real Housewives. And they aren't the same. Like, but they aren't the same thing. Like, I want these women to go Real Housewives, but
they
that's
should
not gonna
be
happen.
Mean Real Housewives. I don't watch Real Housewives.
Oh
so.
My God! But I mean, also the current New York Real Housewives is the same problem. They don't have any fun. They're all completely boring, too self-serious.
I mean, I would love like a Jenna Lyons character for Miranda to date. My
or like
issue
a Lauren
with
Santo Domingo character.
Ugh,
like, what if, you know,
the dream.
LSD was LTW. That's what I want.
Well, that's I thought LTW was going to be a little more LSD because of the name and also her kind of like renown where that first scene, it was like, oh my God, that's LTW. She knows everyone. And then instead, she just is this like cartoon, like Miami 80s exercise. She's always chopping vegetables in her home. Her also, why do I like know anything about her kids? So I'm alarmed by the amount of side characters still.
Same. Always. It will never not shock me.
At least if I have to be around Lily and Rock, which is against my will, why aren't they going to Glossier or like somewhere fun? Like, why aren't they having arguments over like Road versus Rare Beauty or like,
no,
I don't know.
They should be fulfilling Marissa's the Che Diaz role.
This is Marissa as an And Just Like That writer.
I know. And people would love it. I'm not campaigning, but I'm saying these are the plot lines that we need. Mm-hmm. We need better gays.
Better gays.
We need more
richer, more fabulous, messier gays.
Messier
really
gays.
Help the
we
situation.
Need really chaotic lesbians. Uh-huh. Like, we need Miranda to get rejected by someone because she's, like, a later in life out person. I watch a lot of TikTok, and there are so many girls that are late in life lesbians who talk about getting rejected by other lesbians mm-hmm. for being late in life out. I want that plot line. Like, I want a butch to destroy Miranda's
or like,
life.
You want to do a you want to do a callback? Fuck
well.
The bank teller. Bring back the rich lesbians. Bring
oh
back,
my god!
Yes.
You know,
yes. The rich lesbians were so good.
They were amazing.
Why is Miranda, now that she's a lesbian, wearing ugly jumpsuits when she could be wearing tailoring?
What's the famous line? What does she say to Charlotte, the rich lesbian, when they go to the party?
If you don't eat pussy, you're not a dyke.
Yeah.
So good. So good.
Wait,
timeless.
Why don't you have that on a shirt? The Happy Pride. Why are you wearing that this weekend?
Yeah, that is a good merch concept.
That's
for
a good
us,
merch
certainly.
Concept. Also, because that woman was so chic and hot.
Uh-huh. So hot.
I was like, I would believe any rule you tell me.
Mm-hmm. Truly. So I want to pivot to Candace a little bit. Brock, you've interviewed mm-hmm, her mm-hmm. as well, and she Irish goodbye'd you.
Uh-huh. I mean, here's the problem, though. If the And Just Like That writers wanted to, like, really spice up this show, they would go out for one night with Candace and, like, watch her drink 4 Cosmos and just start running around a room and talking about all the drugs she's done and talking about all the men she's had sex with and is currently having sex with. Like, her and her friends, which is, like, Countess Luann and Nicole Miller, those women have a good time. They party. They are in the Hamptons. They are in New York. They are at the club. Like, it would do wonders for these writers to spend time with Candace.
Or they can just read the essay that she wrote about sex in the Hamptons for New York Magazine, which was
where she's talking about men.
Just a balm. Yeah, it was exactly what this show should be. Yeah. Like, the intricacies of dating someone who's, like, a little older, a little younger, who likes you but wants to date a 25-year-old, who, like, has kids that are an awkward age, that, like, lives in the Hamptons but the wrong part. Mm-hmm. Like, that's hot but kind of an asshole. The thing that this show could remind us is that dating is sort of very different and also the same no matter mm-hmm. what age you are. Like, she doesn't need to, like, cater to and fulfill a man, mm-hmm. but she also, like, wants to have sex and meet people and have a good time, but she doesn't need it. And instead we just get Carrie acting like worse than I did when I was a teenager. Mm-hmm. Like, if I were her friends, I'd be like, I am blocking you if we have to have another talk about Aiden and you get defensive about it. But that essay, I hope everyone reads it. It is so good. And it shows the potential and also just the bite, the tartness that this show came from and has zero of.
And that's where Carrie Bradshaw would have landed. You know, she would be Candace now.
Absolutely.
For sure.
I don't know. She's a lot of fun, though. Yeah, we went to a club one time, and we kind of got paired up together to go to this club. And she had 2 Cosmos, and, I mean, we were both absolutely wasted. She has, like, all these amazing advice lines that she uses in interviews over and over again, but
like
they're
what?
Still amazing in person. She'll just, like, lean over and say, you have to be your own Mr. Big. Except, you know, in person, you're just like, oh, my God, yes, Mommy, tell me more. She's like a fairy godmother. Yeah, and then at some point when we were together, this is in the story, so I can share this, you know, she started complaining about not having any drugs and no one wanting to give her drugs, and I had a weed pen on me, and so I gave her my weed pen, and then she got so high, she started running around this club. She knew that I needed to be interviewing people at this club, so she started doing the job for me, which was amazing, because she was going up to all these hot, like, 20-something guys who were like, who is this lady who is trying to ask me about my dating life? And then, yeah, she, like, Irish exited. Everybody told me she left. And then a half hour later, I went down to smoke a cigarette, and she was waiting downstairs. She couldn't figure out how to order an Uber. So I ordered her an Uber and physically picked her up and put her in the back of this car. And it's probably the best night of my life.
I love Candace.
Uh-huh.
What a legend.
And that's so Sex and the City, what you're describing, like the man on the street stuff, where she's going around the club and talking to random strangers.
Also, Carrie loving to talk to strangers and loving to, like, fix people up. That was such a part of Sex and the City. And now Carrie seems to have no interest in the outside world. Like, even in this episode where it's the montage of the shoes, it doesn't actually seem like she's leaving the house or going anywhere. She's just putting on outfits to walk around giant place alone and write maybe 50 to 100 words a day about the woman who doesn't even have a name. Like, it's so weird. It's kind of like a gothic novel. She's dressing more and more like a gothic romance heroine.
Well, also the problem is, as again, going back to this Candace essay, she should be dating. Again, they should not have locked her back with Aiden. She should be swiping on Raya, like Candace, going on dates with older and younger men.
Getting set up.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
She's a shut-in. That's the problem. Yeah.
She's a shut-in. Or at least, like, look, I would love that, but at least give us Seema or someone dating. No one is dating on this show. Miranda instantly found, I think, a very charming, and they have great chemistry, but, like, can it be something where it's, like, one of them isn't ready to commit yet, so they're also... Because also the reality of New York is... Or probably a lot of dating is, like, you're always kind of seeing someone and not really sure if they are seeing a bunch of other people and if they want to be serious or not. And you're always kind of putting off the conversation because it's intense and also you don't want to be disappointed. And, like, those are real emotions. Like, why can't Miranda be experiencing any of that?
Yeah. Also, her follow-up book, what was her last... she wrote a book about grief after Big died? Is that what that book was?
Mm-hmm.
Like, she should be writing...
It
should not be doing some kind of historical fic. She should be writing a book about... like sex. She should be like having sex.
she really should be having sex.
Or at
someone
the
needs
very
to fuck
least.
Like a gay Talise, like late in life. I'm going to go figure out
love.
Like, you know, how to have sex at this age. I'm going to go to a sex party.
Oh, I would love. I mean, I think at the very least, what's selling now in fiction, like the only thing is romanticy. Mm. At the very least, I mean, I don't read it. It's not my thing, but give us some weird, like, fairy porn sex erotica romance novel.
She's writing tentacle porn.
No, but like it could be
like that Francesca Lea Block mermaid porn book.
Yeah, I mean, clearly you guys both have an interest in maritime delights.
Oh my god, what was that other mermaid porn book set in LA? Do you know this book?
Oh, the Pisces?
The Pisces.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah, okay, clearly we're on to something with tentacle and sex and mermaid porn. But like it could be like a queen who's like shut in because of a spell, who lives in her townhouse in like Edith Wharton era, and then like a magical, you know, grumpy writer lives down. I don't know. I'm not writing it, but I'm saying that like it could be something a little more along the lines of what's hot right now because frankly, her editor, who also seems to be her appearance booker, but whatever, it would have put some pressure on her to like, let's put something else out. Glossier made these crazy, like, kitty ear, like, what is it? Like, headbands for, like, washing your face, which you and I texted about and is, like, a real sign of the downfall. But Brock, who needs to go to a furry convention for a book that they happen to be writing, is maybe going
to... furries out there if you would like to talk to me.
But also needs a look and was truly... I thought you were joking when you said maybe you would get...
No, I really might buy them to go to a furry conference because you can't show up at a furry conference without wearing furry attire and that shit is expensive.
Is
like,
it?
Like thousands and thousands of dollars. So I'm going to buy the Glossier cat headbands.
It's so Ulta Beauty adjacent. It's really frightening.
It's
how
like
much are they?
20 or 30?
Something like that.
All the other merch was like 30, like that laptop-shaped mirror, I think is 30.
Have they always had products like this, though?
Mm-hmm.
They have. They've always had merch.
They've always had merch from day one. Emily Weiss, the founder, always said that she wanted to create a brand that you would wear like the sweatshirt of, beyond just beauty. So they had sweatshirts, and then they moved on to like water bottles and seasonal sweatshirts, and then it became more and more like a beach towel, blah, blah, blah. Mm. So, but now it's gotten more and more sort of...
What do you want them
to make? A little boo-boo-y. I don't want merch.
They should make a little boo-boo.
They should. I want them to make good products. Mm. Like, they've just made this, like, really mid lip oil. The new fragrances. I love Glossier You, the original, but the new ones are kind of, like, too fruity. They smell really, like, young. They're very gourmand. And so we're talking about this because the current CEO, Kyle Leahy, who I think started about 2 years ago, if I'm not mistaken, has resigned or been pressured to leave. Who knows? And, you know, they're in a dark place because Rode was just acquired for $1 billion. And Glossier seems like it lacks momentum. All of these people who are kind of like Marie Suter, who is a creative director, who is a real, like, had been there for a long time and also was kind of the creative soul of the brand, left. Kyle is leaving. Cleo Mack, I believe is her name, who was the product development person, is gone. Like, it's, I mean, part of it is they just didn't sell, you know, 5, 8 years ago, whenever, when they could have probably gotten $1 billion or more. And now they're going to have to settle for a lot less. But they're over 10 years old, and they probably have all these investors who are just dying to get some of that money back. And instead, they're trying to raise more money because they really might run out.
So you think that's why they're doing all of these fragrances and things of that nature?
It's a big world of beauty, so I think you have to sort of carve out your own niche, right? And at first, it was kind of the millennial brand, but that wasn't enough because then all these other brands came out that were also very like millennial or Gen Z coded. And so they had this big hit with the fragrance. And fragrance is also really cheap to make, and the, you know, like, profit margin is gigantic. So it's like, if you can have a really successful fragrance thing, you can make it into a huge mini empire or part of your brand. You can do endless spin-offs because you can have Solid and you can have lotion and you can have body mist and blah, blah, blah. But you also have to spend a lot of money developing all those new scents. And, like, they just weren't it. I mean, you love Glossier, you too.
Well, it's not it for us because this brand is just skewing younger. Like, the whole campaign with Cat's Eye, the girl group, like, that is for a young person.
Yeah.
I gave Glossier, you to my 25-year-old sister a couple months ago who had never heard of it because she lives in bumfuck Tennessee. And then she said every single girl in her office bought it. They were all like, what are you wearing? What is this? I've never smelled anything like this.
It smells great. I love it. But yeah, I mean, I think that in the wider world of, like, people who are entering a Sephora, also, you know, they're not distinguished, so you're just in a Sephora surrounded by all this stuff. A lot of it looks similar. You know, like, what do you buy? Glossier always looks ransacked at Sephora, too.
It does.
So it's, like, a special kind of thing. But they were, I think, the number one fragrance at Sephora, at least for a while.
It's pretty crazy, considering who they're competing with.
Right. But now they have all these other brands, like the, what's it called? Like, the Brazilian Bum Bum Cream brand.
Oh, mm-hmm. Sol de Janeiro.
Sol de Janeiro.
Oh, I love that shit.
I know.
I love that shit.
So does it actually make your butt, like, you know?
Does it matter?
Is that actually where you're supposed to put it? This is how, like, I use it as, like, a body lotion.
I don't believe that that shit has firming properties. They always say that it does. I just like the way it smells.
You don't think there's any caffeine in it?
I have no clue.
I use a serum right now that has caffeine in it. And I think it does a little, like, of the, like, shrinking of the pores. But who knows? Yeah, I've never tried the Bum Bum Cream. The scent isn't for me.
Oh, I love it. I feel like I'm, you know, in Miami.
I feel like
I live in Boca. I'm 55 years old.
That's the fantasy?
Yeah.
You are so aspirationally middle-aged.
I am.
See, I'm more like I'm a slutty 13-year-old in middle school. You know what I mean?
Oh, see, my fantasy is I am this, like, hot and free girl in, like, not on the beach in Rio, because my fantasy can't go that far. I'll never be a hot and free girl on the beach. But, like, it may be in Sao Paulo. I have a boyfriend or a dad who owns a helicopter, because you guys know helicopters are the way which rich people get around in Sao Paulo because of traffic. Anyway, it kind of ends there. But I don't like the fragrance, so I don't use it. So I'm not allowed to have. That's what's keeping me from that life. I don't think there's an easy fix. I could see some scenario where, like, they try to get Emily Weiss to come back, the founder, and, like, maybe not as CEO, but as someone who's, like, more involved in the creative process, as a kind of forward-facing show of, like, we're getting back to our roots. But they still need a CEO with, like, real business experience, like an adult in the room who can turn that company around, especially, like, with tariffs.
Do they ever have celebrity faces? Why is there not, like, a celebrity face?
They,
like,
really briefly had
Olivia Rodrigo.
Oh, that's
Olivia
right.
Rodrigo, yes. But it lasted, I think,
actually
less than
person,
six
though.
Months or 9 months. It was incredibly short.
Yeah, it is fascinating how at the beginning they were very much just trying to sell you that sort of French girl, you're not wearing makeup kind of look. So I think that's why it's so jarring and upsetting when we see the kitty spa headband, because like no cool French girl would ever.
Also, like, look, kitty spa headband, it's in the privacy of your home. It could be basic and corny, but then make it like the way that a Labubu is, where it's just like over the top. Like, make it the most like weird, giant, millennial pink, like oversized rosettes.
Like, but then it's giving like rave. I don't know.
Look, no. I'm not.
For a while, Chelsea Manning, when Chelsea Manning was a DJ, only wore light up cat ears to the club. And that's all I can see when
Wait,
I see
what
that.
If Glossier, what if Chelsea the new Manning face of Glossier is Chelsea Manning?
That would
be
iconic.
I would ride so hard for that.
So hard.
Happy Pride. Yeah, that's what we need. Is like
or
signing
full
Chelsea Manning.
Right wing. And, you know, Kai, one of those Trump grandchildren, face of Glossier.
Kai
That's
Trump.
How you say it.
Yeah. Yeah, or get really in, like, be the official makeup sponsor of Lauren Sanchez or something
well,
like that.
Well, she's too gaudy.
Well, they've gone kind of gaudy, yeah. Like those lip oils and stuff. Also, just the photo shoots, with Cat's Eye, the branding. It looks so Kylie Cosmetics 5 years ago. And I know there are plenty of talented marketing and creative directors and imagery people out there that can give fresh ideas and balance it with like market desires. It's not my personal talent, but I know that, you know, like someone could do it. I don't know that the brand can be what it was in, you know, 2016 or 2018 or whatever, but it can be a lot better than it is now. I want so much more for them.
Yeah, I want it to age with us. More like Clinique. Let's skew older.
Yeah.
Why not?
Why not? Millennials are aging.
Exactly.
What is that, like, America's Next Top Model line, which is like, we were all rooting for you.
Yes.
That is it.
Okay, so I want to move on to the big news of the week, which is Anna Wintour's not complete departure from Vogue, her semi-departure from Vogue. She will no longer be editor-in-chief, but she is staying on as Condé Nast's global chief content officer and global editorial director at Vogue. What do we make of this?
I just think everybody's acting like she quit or like she's leaving.
She's if not anything, even retiring.
This is, yeah. If yeah. anything, this is almost even more of like a God-level promotion. Like, oh, I'm going to bring on another editor and I'm going to be your boss. And she's probably still going to control a lot. I bet she still chooses the celebrity cover of American Vogue.
Well, it just shows that you are, that Vogue is something that Anna oversees and you are... You're like the regional director, and that America's version is no more important or separate than like Choma's British Vogue or French Vogue or whatever
else.
Well,
this is their whole push, part also with the Vanity Fair new editor, where they're doing all these global titles again.
Yeah.
Which I'm like, does anyone read? I don't really understand. I'm sure it's a business thing.
Part of editor-in-chief as like a retired designation is that you're considered like the head of a brand.
Yes.
You're not considered like the head of a magazine.
Yes.
Or even a digital magazine. And so much of that job, for Vanity Fair at least, was like being a good sort of steward
brand
of the Vanity Fair.
Yeah.
Oscar party too, yep. Which is what Will Welch does really well at GQ. And Vogue is an interesting place because obviously they have the Met Ball, but Anna Wintour is still going to be the Met Ball person. Mm-hmm. So they don't necessarily need someone who's a seasoned veteran of events and all of that. But
well, it's kind of sad. It's like, okay, you're going to hire a new editor who will never have the influence or position that she had. Like she's not relinquishing. If she would just step down.
Who do you
down.
Think it? It
I'm
I know
sure it's
who
Choma.
I mean,
I would.
But like, why would Choma leave
British
Vogue when it's kind of a lateral move?
I'm sure it's.
I mean, Choma is would be lovely because everyone. She's like the most. She and Chloe are two of the most likable people, hardworking. I think Chloe would be good. Chloe Mall, that is. She's really talented. Here's my hot take of who I would like to get it: Marc Jacobs.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah. Did
and
a wonderful.
The issue that he edited was
that's
amazing.
That's the thing. Yep. Edited a great issue. New blood. You can have editors who are line editing or signing, and he can just have wild ideas. Also, like something that someone I know always says about Vogue, which is, I think, true, is that if you have to lead Vogue, especially now that it's this like regional American thing, you have to be invested in American fashion. And that's not the easiest thing to do now, where there's fewer and fewer sort of like stars in American fashion, especially ones that are working for American brands. And Marc Jacobs is invested in American fashion and has a great eye, can find future stars, but also sort of, you know, can draw upon that experience. And he's just like a cool, it's like a little bit Deanna Vreeland in terms of like,
oh yeah,
like wild proclamation department, which is kind of like what it could really use. A totally fresh take, has such deep roots in like the art world. Like, let him have Sofia Coppola guest edit an issue or whatever, or like Cindy Sherman shoot a cover. We need someone who's going to do something so fresh, because the Anna Wintour era of covers are so samey. And I think everyone is burnt out. And we need, like, yeah, we need fresh blood, but also someone that Anna respects. That's my write-in vote.
You know, the tawdry, like, kind of unproven rumors are also that, like, Lauren Sanchez has something to do with this.
Oh, that, I've heard that.
Uh-huh. Well, it started during the Vanity Fair when there were rumors that Jeff Bezos had bought Vanity Fair for Lauren Sanchez as a wedding present.
Whoa.
And then,
that
of course, Vanity Fair
got
a new editor.
I miss those days when billionaires, like, bought people crazy things.
I have to say, it kind of, I'm like, with their wedding next weekend and her stepping down and there being no technical editor to get mad at, I think we'll have a Lauren Sanchez cover within the month.
That's what I heard. Yeah. I heard that she is going to do the cover. And I was like, I will believe it when I see it, of course. But
I mean,
then
they did that giant profile. It could have also those.
For sure.
And the cover. And honestly, those pictures were so good. I'm going to place my candidacy forward to write a Lauren Sanchez.
Here are the two covers that
I am dying for in the next year. Lauren Sanchez, Kylie and Timotei together.
I want Melania, too.
Oh, I'm dying for a Melania cover.
They should just lean into this era, and that's what she's always wanted. Give her the cover. Like a totally...
Well, Melania already had a cover.
Yeah.
Yeah, but she wants her now.
You know? I also want an Usha cover. Mm. Lean into the sort of despicable, you know, despot era that we're living in.
That's what Vanity Fair should do, at least.
Yeah.
For sure.
And you can hire writers to do a cynical take or whatever.
Yeah,
I thought Chloe did...
You don't need access. Just shoot her and write a kind of...
Chloe Moll did a great job with the Lauren Sanchez piece, what was it, last year or 2 years ago, and with just enough arched eyebrow to, like, keep everyone happy and not to just be, like, a puff piece. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, like, let Annie Leibovitz or someone similarly, you know, let, like, Tyler Mitchell shoot the hell out of... Lauren Sanchez.
That would be crazy.
At fucking Golden Hour. Mm-hmm. Like, I just need something different, even if it's something that's so dark and despicable, but at least it would be representative of the times that we're living in.
For
and
sure.
Vogue does not feel very representative because they're kind of trying to have it both ways of like one foot in the sort of.
Well, both of those magazines, it's like, okay, great, you rented a studio, got a celebrity, and shot them in front of a curtain. Like, they're not...
Or a green screen, Or they're jumping, or they're,
At
the very least, do the British Vogue thing that they did so well, at least under Edward Enninful, which is, like, you show up on British Vogue cover doing a total, like, different look makeover, like Billie Eilish doing, like, blonde with that, like, brassiere thing, kind of looking like 50s cheesecake. Give me something. I need to be excited about something.
Well, I do think we are going to get this Lauren Sanchez cover, but we shall see, especially now that I've seen photos from like this wedding weekend, because she's in Schiaparelli, she's in Vintage McQueen. I was like, this is shit that she would never wear in a million years.
Well, supposedly Anna Wintour helped pick her wedding dress.
Yeah,
like Lauren Sanchez, and I'll hire Camille Paglia to write an essay.
100%. That's for exactly it. The kind like of that thing is
that.
Doing.
Yeah, that is it. Mm-hmm. You know, like let
her write something.
Well, you know, I would do a package.
Yeah,
Lauren Sanchez could write something.
Let her
Camille
write
Paglia
about
could
her
write
wedding.
Something. Yeah. She and
do the
like,
Emily Rice version of the like pre-wedding like newsletter.
Oh, I would die to have her wedding black book. Uh-huh, uh-huh. Let her and Oprah do like a Q&A together. You know, Oprah's at the wedding.
Yep.
Like there's so much
Katy Perry and like Lauren Sanchez in conversation.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah, I would do a package. It could be 20 pages because also it's going to get so much web traffic. And again, better or worse, it would be reflecting the times we live in. And I want someone who's going to guide me and help me see the times with, you know, a certain sort of remove or distance, but someone with a point of view.
But they won't do that. Anna's too. I think Anna's too.
No, no one's going to do that, but this is what I'd like.
If you had the job.
Yeah, or just as like someone who likes to complain about things that I don't, that I'm not in charge of. Yeah.
We also have to get into Jonathan Anderson's first Dior collection that just came out. I watched the live stream while in line at that Balenciaga sample sale. A thrilling experience.
Truly, you are living the life. I want to hear your thoughts first.
I liked it. It was more J.W. Anderson than I expected.
Same.
It was very preppy. Mm-hmm. It was very young. I think young is good for Dior because I haven't associated Dior menswear with youth since like the Eddie Slimane era.
Right.
So I think that that is great for them. And I loved the styling. I loved how they mixed in these sort of things that we don't often see from Jonathan Anderson, the more formal types of clothes, the tuxedo shirts, the ties, that sort of thing.
I love the color palette. Those like pinks and then the greens I think are really beautiful and beautiful together. I think the shorts, those like really oversized shorts, are very commercial. I could definitely see guys both like sort of super kind of more like fashion forward ones, but also kind of like elevated dad types buying those.
What, the giant, like, cargo jorts?
Yeah, but then they also had that sort of, like, dark green one that was, like, less comically oversized with some of the more tailoring on top. I could see those, like, yeah, just various iterations of that being a commercial success. I didn't love those boxing shoes, but they're not really for me. I don't really love designer sneakers.
Yeah, me neither. People will definitely buy this stuff. I think the logoed stuff, certainly.
I think the logo stuff will sell well. I appreciate the return to the old Dior logo. I think it looks great. I'm going to be sick of seeing guys with sweater vests that say Dior on it in no time. But I still was kind of underwhelmed.
Yeah.
Like, it's fine, but it's not that exciting. It felt a little bit kind of a riff on a lot of things he's already done, and I'd liked more of a metabolized version of the history of Dior.
Well, I did like the way they did this sort of take on the bar jacket for a man. I don't think we've seen that before. That's, of course, very Dior, very Jonathan Anderson. But yeah, I agree that it was safe.
Yeah.
It was interesting, though, how sort of none of the Loewe-isms made its way into that show. Again, yeah. I feel like it was much more like his own label than anything he did there.
I feel like we might see them in some of the women's wear stuff, especially because he hired, what's her name, Kristen, who was the Loewe shoe designer, who has a great solo shoe line. And she did the famous, like, balloon shoes for Loewe. I could see her doing something bold. I could see her doing some wild references to like 1950s and 60s archive shoes, but there's so much to reference. Not that you have to reference things, but I don't know. I wanted it to feel really, really fresh and like a way forward for men to be dressing and considering. And it just felt safe. It felt merchandise ready. It felt marketable. But not that exciting, which is like I'm feeling that with a lot of men's fashion week. I felt that way with Louis Vuitton. I haven't been a fan of any of those. Dries, I thought, was promising. Like, I like the proposition of men in peplums.
And men with, like, giant, like, bowling bags.
Yeah. I mean, at least that feels kind of different. But yeah. Also, Dries is a much smaller brand and a much different customer. But, yeah, I'll be interested. I'm following, but I just want something to make me feel alive.
I'm with you. Although I do appreciate the logo change. And I don't know what happened first. Like, was that all caps Dior logo? Was that like before the Zara logo? Like, which one? Because they ended up looking the same.
That's,
you know,
a great
what I mean?
Question. I mean, designers love changing a logo. Like, all the like Celine, like, I can't keep track of whether there's the accent aigu
on the E or not. Like, they're always changing it. You know, Saint Laurent had to be drop the Eve. I'm sure the new designer for Celine will have some entirely new logo and, like, way of, you know, capitalizing it. It's just such a weird, like...
It's dumb.
Yeah. It's a little bit of, like, a pissing contest or marking your territory or something.
Oh, you know what I realized? I forgot to ask Brock something very vital earlier. The West Village Girls.
Oh my God.
Have you gotten backlash from the West Village Girls about this New York Magazine cover story that you wrote, a la Che Diaz, or is
it silent?
I mean,
the girls actually, I love writing about influencers because they usually understand more than anyone else that all press is good press for them. Mm-hmm. They can be privately mad at me, but still very excited to be a part of this thing. So they're usually posting the cover on their Instagram and then texting me angrily on the side. Also, all of their critiques of it were just... dumb. The biggest critique, I think, of the piece was people were mad that I didn't talk about gentrification more, which is just the dumbest. Like, some of these girls were going on TikTok and apologizing to their followers that they gentrified the West Village. But they were acting as if they directly replaced the, like, gays and bohemians that lived there 50 years ago. One of the main characters in the story literally apologized for replacing the gays. I was like, honey, that wasn't you. Like,
gays. Yeah, I'd like to make an apology.
There were, like, decades of, like, West Village
changes. I know
changes.
I pushed you up to Hell's Kitchen.
In between. So that was what, like, the craziest part to me. Just like how it became a gentrification talking point.
The West Village has always been too expensive. Like, I moved to New York in 2002, 2003. I couldn't afford it then. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like, you're not talking about Ridgewood.
No.
Although I can't wait for you to write the Ridgewood Girls.
I know. Next, I want to write about, like, dumb, young, lefty Brooklyn people. But
I can't wait.
Yeah. Perfect. Yeah, your article actually prompted me to go on Zillow because I was like, okay, what conditions are these girls living in for, what is it, $7,000, $8,000 a month, roughly, for, like, a studio or a one-bedroom?
Mm-hmm. It's bad.
Harrowing shit.
Yes, I know. Because all those buildings are so old. They're also so short. They weren't allowed to get that tall. So most of these people, like, there's no light. They're tiny. They're weird shaped. Mm-hmm. They're quirky. This didn't make it in the piece, but one of the girls told me that they're all getting really pissed off that the lighting is not good enough for their videos in the West Village. So they're moving to Tribeca because they'll get better lighting.
I don't know. Tribeca, actually, I think, has kind of bad lighting.
Or, they should move to Fide-Eye. What they're secretly doing
they're calling
is moving
Tribeca,
to the financial district, but they don't want to say they live in Fide-Eye.
Well, here's the thing is, like, all these people, what they want is a newer building that has big giant windows and central air and a washing machine and a doorman. And I get it, but you can't, unless you live on, like, certain blocks of Park Avenue, you're not going to get all of those things in a charming pre-war West Village apartment. You really have to choose one or the other.
Yes.
I like
or
to play games.
Or they're to Williamsburg or Greenpoint. They're also taking over my neighborhood. They're moving to Greenpoint.
Right. You and I were having drinks like a month
or
so ago. And then,
it is shocking. Yeah. Can't go anywhere for a drink at 4 o'clock in Greenpoint anymore on a Tuesday because it's filled with, like, young straight women.
Oh, God forbid they learn about Bernie.
They're taking over the whole world. I mean, my favorite piece of press that came out of that cover was this, like, piece in the newspaper in Edinburgh that was like, the West Village girls have arrived in Scotland too. Like,
oh, because they all go to University of Edinburgh, right? Yeah, isn't that, like, a super expat American school?
But I think also everybody, because of, like, TikTok, feels some kind of sense that they're being encroached on by, like, basic biddies making videos.
True.
I think that's a very recognizable. Like, it was easy to situate this story in the West Village, but I actually think it's kind of more universal.
You know where no one is making basic videos about? Living on the Upper East Side.
Oh.
I probably am saying this too soon, but, like, for now...
You just ruined it. You
for
just
now,
ruined.
It's
I think,
like,
Cultured Magazine already ran a Forget the West Village. It's happening on the Upper East Side.
That's true. That's true. I've been sent it many times.
It's so
you
scary
have been
to
in
see.
That, by the way.
I'm not
kind
one
of offended that you weren't.
I'm glad you're offended. I am not one to be offended by inclusion or lack of inclusion.
No, I
loved reading it. Also, you know, someday I will get to write my magnum opus about my own personal gentrification of the Upper East Side. Someone had to do it.
It's really more of a becoming, though. You're just becoming yourself.
Yeah. Exactly. I was always just a woman of a certain age. I just had to like grow into it. I was born 57.
See, I feel that way too. I've always felt that way. I remember like watching the first Wives Club when it came out and I was like, oh, these women are my peers.
Yeah, totally.
Like, what is wrong with me?
No, but that's how I read so many 90s magazine editor things where I was like, you know, some people talk about like, I forget, I was talking to someone about certain nostalgia for growing up. And I was like, no, because mine was always, I couldn't wait to be an adult who was dressing day to night, who had a signature scent, who was shopping and had salespeople that knew them at like, you know, I don't know, Perry Ellis or something like that. Like, they had an apartment. The job was always vague. Something vaguely writing-ish, but vague. No husband, no wife, a dog living alone. And then it's like, guess what, bitch? You got it.
Sorry, not to keep harping, but why isn't And Just Like That more like the First Wives Club?
Oh,
you know?
Yes.
Or like, just lean in. I want full, like, Grace and Frankie style, like, gags.
Who's going to cheat? Who's going to cheat and who's going to...
All of them. There should be no husbands at this point. They should have killed or divorced all of them off.
I agree.
Oh, yeah.
No husbands.
But also, that's also realistic. Like, why is the divorce rate, like, zero and on Just Like That? Like, that's just not reality, too. Yeah, there needs to be more divorces.
It's so true. Also, to bring it back to the First Wives Club, that's a movie where, like, no side character is wasted. Every side character in that movie is doing the most
with
the scene that they have. And, like, it's all so perfect. And
also, SJP already in it.
SJP already in it. Also, they're all very rich in the First Wives Club, too, but it's never really talked about. Yet it feels, I don't know, it feels
just
so
aspirational. Would love to know what the lesbian daughter is up to right now.
I know, right?
Yeah, she'd probably be like early 50s.
Yeah, she'd be early 50s.
A little older
by now.
Than me, yeah.
Perfect love interest for Miranda.
Oh, perfect.
So we're going to talk more about And Just Like That on our Patreon post show and just after that. So if you guys want more Brock, more Marissa, please join us there. But for now, we must leave you. Thank you guys so much for being here. It means the world to me to have such fabulous, fabulous New Yorkers on this program.
We love you. I could do this for 1,000 hours, sadly.
You line up in the studio.
It's as if no one ever talked to me about anything before. I just have to talk about And Just Like That.
I'm trying to think of the perfect way to end this. Maybe on the count of three, we could all say Che Diaz.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Okay. 1, 2, 3.
Che Diaz.
Bye, guys.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.